Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
My friend Adam is going on a cruise to Mexico with his mom, like, on Wednesday. Do you have any words of advice?
Don't go. No, be safe, have fun. Text me when you get home.
Adam, text her when you get home or we're going to worry. Hi, Julia Mazzavalli.
Hi, Patrick Hines.
How's it going, girl?
It's going great. I wish this was a whole hell of a lot gayer, but here we are.
Okay, what do we have to tell them about first, and then we'll get into how not gay this is? Don't worry, we're going to have plenty of fun, fam. It's just not gay
enough. We're gay enough, yeah, but I'm just saying.
Join the Facebook group, my loves. It's the True Crime Obsessed podcast discussion group. It's so fun. It's so great. That's also where we're going to let you know what's going on, but also the Disky. We do that there. Everything we do in the Facebook group, we also do in the Disky, just differently.
Yeah, we do more in the Disky.
You
honestly.
Do?
Oh, yeah.
But the Facebook group is still fun.
Oh, it's still fun, but that has like separate channels, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? But no, yeah, you're right. Everything that we're talking about.
It's all the same, but it's also great. It's just really good. Tell me about the Pates.
We have a Patreon, in case you didn't know. That's where we do
Can you imagine someone's like just finding out for the first
but
time?
But maybe.
That's true.
That happens all the time. You have to expect and consider that
right.
This is going to be, it's always someone's first episode.
Yeah. Well, then to that person, we say welcome.
We say welcome and hello. And we say that on Patreon, you have like ad-free versions of the regular episodes. But then you also have, that's where we do our things that have multiple episodes. So we just did Amy Bradley is Missing on Netflix. We're doing Mr. and Mrs. Murder. We've done all the classic ones like The Jinx, both seasons, all that stuff that have like, you know, multiple episodes.
Mr. and Mrs. Murder is really good.
Pretty crazy.
It's really, fam, it's one of the craziest ones we've done. We also do Drag Bingo at the $5 level.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. We do it every month.
Yeah.
All right. Tell them what we're talking about.
This is called Ruby Red-Handed, Stealing America's Most Famous Pair of Shoes. It is on Hulu.
Ruby slippers are definitely the most famous shoes in the world.
Let's open the bid at $1,550,000. Anybody 2.4, 2.4?
I mean, you can say you have a Rembrandt and people say that's nice, but you can say you have the Ruby slippers and everybody you meet is going to want to see the damn shoes.
$10 million. You want to just count by millions? It's fine with me.
I mean, I would classify them as the Holy Grail.
That is the Rolls Royce.
$18 million. Historic piece. Part of our American culture.
They were stolen.
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 $22 million. Anybody else?
He said, what? Why? Why did they take them?
I'd love to spit them in the eye.
Fair warning now, I'm at $25 million.
The real gem behind all of this is the story of where they've been.
This is a pretty good documentary. I like this. I was entertained. I learned a lot about Judy Garland. We were texting this morning and I'm like, the fatal flaw of this documentary, there's not enough gays. There's like no self-identified homosexuals in this.
We desperately need Jinx Monsoon.
Yes.
Doing her Judy Garland in Snatch Game. If you haven't seen it, it's perfect because she doesn't do Wizard of Oz era Judy.
Yes,
she
exactly.
She does post. Is that my camera? Please. Is she? Jinx,
I know.
You were so missed, Jinxy.
Imagine if she were an actual talking head as Judy Garland in this episode.
Yeah,
it'd be perfect.
But I would love her as Jinx and then like if she slips into it once or twice.
Totally.
But I think she would be, I think her voice
yeah.
or a voice like hers was very, very missed here.
Absolutes. Listen, I really liked it. We're going to learn a lot. And actually, I knew this story because other podcasts have covered the theft of the shoes, but I did not know the resolution. And the resolution
oh, wow.
is, because the resolution only happened in 2024.
Yeah.
And so we're going to get there. Like this really has a very interesting ending.
We get a very long coming up on, and I just want to say one thing where, so some guy is like, you can have a Rembrandt and people are like, oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
You say you have the Ruby slippers, everyone's going to want to see the damn shoes.
Yes.
And I just have truer words have never been spoken.
Yeah.
It is the perfect culmination of why this captivated so many people, like this case in particular.
The Wizard of Oz
like
is
Rembrandt Schmemrandt.
Totally.
Show me the fucking shoes, man.
Also, we learn a Rembrandt does get stolen in this and they
or
find out years
it?
Later that it's a fake.
Does
I'm
it?
Obsessed. But like, the Wizard of Oz is so wild. It's not really my thing, but like it is, I know, and it's such a piece of American culture.
Yeah, it was very big in my house. It's my mom's favorite movie. I was the Wicked Witch for Halloween several years when I was a child.
Tell them everything. She's texted me a bunch of pictures this morning. They are so cute, but you have to tell them what you told everybody.
So my thing was that I wanted I swear to God, this is true. I mean, I have the pictures to prove it, so you can call me a liar. But like,
no one thinks you're lying.
But I wanted to look like the Wicked Witch, but I wanted everyone to know that I was like nice and good.
Totally.
So I was wearing, and it really, this is where having an Italian seamstress grandmother like really came in handy.
Oh.
Because I would just be like, I want to look like that. She'd be like, okay. Like when I was like, I want to be a Stegosaurus. She was like, cool. And then made me a Stegosaurus. Green and purple, pre-Barney, by the way. That was not a Barney thing. So three Halloweens, I think, I was the Wicked Witch, but everyone had to know that I wanted the all black aesthetic, but I wanted everyone to know that I was like a good witch.
Down to the green face. Like you had the green face and everything.
Yeah. For one of them, I had a green face. And in the photo, it's very faded. That must have been at the end of the day.
Yeah. You do look a little tired in the picture. Like
it was a little bit.
The end of the trick or treating.
There's one where I have like a ribbon around my neck. Like I must have won some contest. Yeah. Then when I was going through the old photo albums, I was like, oh, there I am as Peter Pan. Like all of this is just like check. Tick, tick, tick.
The only cool story for costumes we have in our family is that Steve's mom, Judy, made a lion costume for Steve and Ben.
Oh, you've told this. Yes.
When they were little kids. And then now it's been handed down to all the kids. So we have a picture of like Steve in it when he was a kid and Daisy wearing it when she was a kid. And like all of the Tipton siblings have worn it when they were. And the pictures exist of them as kids and their kids wearing the same costume.
You have to keep it preserved somehow. Yeah. Like, where does it live?
Somehow Judy does. Judy can do anything. Like Judy really is good at this stuff. But it's also made well. You know what I mean?
Look, that's half the battle.
Remember when your parents were almost killed by a serial killer?
I do.
I was thinking about that today when I saw a picture of your dad. I was like, that guy almost didn't live.
Like several years prior.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It is very crazy. If you don't know that story, it's a good one.
The Son of Sam almost got your mom and dad.
Yeah. They were sitting in a spot where people were like immediately after they were sitting in the spot.
It's so crazy.
It's really crazy.
Girl, Chime is back. Look, Chime understands that every dollar counts. That's why when you set up direct deposit through Chime, you get access to free features like free overdraft coverage, which I always say, where were you in my 20s? Getting paid up to 2 days earlier with direct deposit and more.
Yeah, learn more at chime.com/TCO.
Fam, with Chime, you can open an account with no monthly fees and no maintenance fees.
Yeah, and here's the thing. With qualifying direct deposits, you're eligible for free overdraft up to $200 on debit card purchases and cash withdrawals.
Not to mention, you know these ATM fees are out of control. You get access to over 47,000 fee-free ATMs, more than the top three national banks combined. I told you about that time I paid a $6 fee to get $20 in
and
cash.
And that's why they get you.
I know.
Because they know you need whatever that was. Water, probably.
We truly, absolutely obsessed.
Also, they have 24/7 customer support, which is really important, especially when you're dealing with a money issue and a money thing. You don't want to be stranded somewhere.
Totally.
So it's like, okay, great. I don't have to pay the $6 fee, but where's my customer service? Guess what? They have it 24/7.
They're right there. Talk to Samantha.
You know?
Fam, work on your financial goals through Chime today.
Open an account in 2 minutes at chime.com/TCO.
That's chime.com/TCO.
Chime feels like progress.
Sure does.
Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Timing depends on submission of payment file. Fees apply at out-of-network ATMs. Bank ranking and number of ATMs according to U.S. News and World Report 2023. Chime checking account required.
So we're in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, June 2018.
Not Michigan. Don't get it twisted.
They really want us to know it is Grand Rapids, Minnesota, not Michigan. Common mistake. And I said, boy, oh boy, did Judy Garland put this goddamn place on the map.
So did Bob Stein. Sergeant Bob Stein said that as well.
Bob Stein, he's the police detective who catches the case like initially. He really wants us to know that when he was growing up.
Growing up, Grand Rapids was a very quiet town. Grand Rapids now is more hustle and bustle. The traffic drives me up the wall.
Now the traffic is out of hand. We are told this as we see an aerial shot of four cars on the road.
And there are 10,000 people who live there, we're told. So it's like, I see what you're doing.
The traffic is okay. It's not that bad.
They want to have fun today with this editing.
Yeah.
But Judy
Garland...
Do you
want to have fun today?
I do.
Okay.
I'm sure as hell trying. So they have this like Judy Garland historic house because she's from there. Do you remember the Kings of Tupelo episode?
Yeah.
All about Elvis?
Yeah.
This is like that, only Judy Garland, but specifically the Wizard of Oz.
This town.
It's very Wizard of Oz specific.
Yeah, it
Judy.
Is. And I learned so much about the Judy Garland house. And to see it is pretty amazing.
So it's not just like the townspeople, but other famous people like Pierce Brincott. He means Bronson Pinchot from Perfect Strangers.
No, I looked this up.
And the First Wives Club.
I looked this up. Bronson Pinchot is amazing. If you're not following him on TikTok and Instagram, you should be. His TikTok is great. He's very smart. He, like, talks about smart things. He looks great. Like, I love this guy.
Great.
He was also in, what's the Eddie Murphy one?
I don't know. I'm only going to talk about the First Wives Club.
Okay, fair enough.
Guardo Feliz.
He was in the cop one. The
Beverly Hills Cop?
Beverly Hills Cop. And apparently, on Bronson Pinchot's first day on set, in his first scene with Eddie Murphy, they couldn't get through it because Bronson Pinchot was so funny that Eddie Murphy was, like, falling out.
I see you look at this base.
Yeah, I was wondering how much something like this went for.
$130,000.
Get the fuck out of here.
No, I cannot. It's serious because it's very important, base.
I love that
Bronson
story.
Bronson Pinchot is like, he's like a really unsung, like, great comedic actor, I think.
And this guy with his full chest calls him Pierce Brinkheim.
I know.
Well, with
I
all the confidence in the world.
I looked up this story. Apparently, Bronson Pinchot was the Grand Marshal of Oz Extravaganza 2016. That's what brought him to town.
Why don't we have at least a drag queen here? Extravaganza?
Truly.
Eleganza?
I mean, I swear to God, it's almost homophobic how few gays there are. And by how few gays, I mean zero.
Except what they talk about, ones that, I mean, I don't mean to assign anybody anything, but I think maybe some people they talk about from the past might have been, but I don't know.
We don't know.
I'm guessing here.
And I told you I was going to try to not be insufferable about it, but you're being insufferable about it in the best possible way, so I'm thrilled. What I mean to say is thank you for letting us talk about this.
Of course. Why wouldn't I? I don't make the rules.
I'm glad to mention that there's no gays here.
None. Not a one.
Well, we meet Maria Oz. We'll get into that in a second.
A-W-E-S.
A-W-E-S. She's the filmmaker here. The important thing to note is that there's two time periods in which this documentary is being made. She really did all of her filming in 2018 when she became obsessed with the story of the missing ruby slippers. And then we get the end of it in 2024 when there's a resolution. And that's a pretty cool thing about this documentary, I think.
Yeah. So let's talk about this Judy Garland Festival.
The Judy Garland Festival began 40 years ago in 1979.
One of the great pleasures of coming to this festival is to be with people who sit there and want to be reminded of the joy of Judy Garland.
It started in 1979. There's a picture of Margaret Hamilton, the original Wicked Witch, going there.
It's pretty amazing. It was crazy to me to think that Judy Garland was long dead at that point.
Yeah.
I forget how young Judy Garland died. Yeah.
Do you know she got, like, severely injured, Margaret Hamilton, with the fire?
Yes, I didn't, because her makeup was made of copper. And so the fire, like, burned her skin.
And also, I don't know if we're conflating both stories, but the man who played the Tin Man, I'm so sorry, his name is escaping me. He's super, super famous. He also got very sick from the paint.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the silver paint.
My God.
There was, like, lead in it or something horrifying.
Didn't they have, like, three directors? It was, like, kind of a nightmare to make that movie.
Yeah. Look, let's get into it for a second, because the Judy Garland story, they tell us kind of, not really. They sugarcoat the F out of this, because they say her family moved to Grand Rapids in 1914. They ran the local movie theater. She was born Frances Ethel Gum. She had two older sisters. They lived in this house that they've now, like, preserved and, you know, like, restored from 1914 to 1926. Everyone in the family, quote, was involved in performing. Judy Garland, I'm sorry, Judy Garland would go on to call her own mother the real Wicked Witch.
Oh my God, really?
Her mother was violently abusive, shoved Judy Garland into show business, was the first person to give her drugs.
Oh my God,
as
really?
As a teenager. Like, that's not the story we're telling here.
No.
They want to tell the super cute one, but, like, her mother was abusive in so many ways. Her mother never defended her against the studios, let the studios, like, be horribly abusive to her teenage daughter. So when it's like, oh my God, like, this cute version of Judy Garland's childhood, I'm like, Jinx, where are you? Like, what is that meme where it's like, I need to talk to a gay person? Like,
Because it does feel like this documentary is made by the Chamber of Commerce of this town. They just want you to think that because I'm like, oh my goodness, what an idyllic childhood.
She had a miserable childhood.
Oh, that's so sad.
It's heartbreaking. But, like, let's hear the cute version. So the cute version is that Judy Garland started performing of her own volition at 2.5 years old. Like, please.
Oh, right.
The story goes,
she sang Jingle Bells at her dad's theater one Christmas, and the audience was just awestruck. She kept singing it over and over, and they said, "Baby, get off," they yelled from the wings. And she said, "But I like it." Her dad had to throw her over his shoulder and take her off.
She like wouldn't get off the stage.
So much so that people were like, get that child, that literal toddler off the stage. And she's like, but I like it.
But I love the song.
And the rest is very, very dark, convoluted history.
Do you think she was singing the Barbara version? Jingle bells, jingle bells. All the gays are singing along with me.
She's also a time traveler.
I know. How did you know about that?
I know. Everybody knows about that. So Grand Rapids, Minnesota has the largest Judy/Oz collection in the world.
It's kind of amazing. They've got like one of the Wicked Witch's hats. They've got a spear from the part of the movie where they're mean to Dorothy.
Look, I can't.
They've got the carriage from the Rainbow Horse scene, which I didn't know about.
They call it a Winky spear. I didn't know it was called that. They have Dorothy's dress. What do you mean you don't know that's a horse of a different color? That's like...
Is that from The Wizard? You gotta be nicer to me about all this.
When was the last time you watched The Wizard of Oz?
Probably when I was like, I don't know, a long time ago.
Does it not like mean anything to you?
Not really. Wow. So here's the problem. I was just talking to somebody about this last night. Because my mom is gay, I don't have a lot of like the gay things that like they clung to when they were little kids to like feel seen.
Uh-huh.
Because I had a lesbian for that.
Oh.
So I missed out on a lot of like the formative gay shit.
I want to hear from the lesbians who were like, excuse you.
I know.
Born and raised on The Wizard of Oz.
I know. You also had a real childhood and I didn't, you know what I mean? So I didn't, I don't know. We would watch it, but it was also very long. I remember being a little bit bored.
Gosh.
Am I going to gay hell for this?
A little bit.
Okay.
Maybe. So first, like the book came out, which is very, very different from the movie.
Most people don't know that the 1939 film was not the first film adaptation of The Wizard of Oz. It was actually made as a silent film in 1910. It's a silent film first, an animated film, and finally in 1939, this major musical motion picture that we know today.
The Wizard of Oz first was a silent film in 1910.
Which I didn't know, and we see a clip of it. Look, I'm, like I've said, I'm a baby here. I'm seeing all this for the first time. I was so excited to, like, know the history of The Wizard of Oz.
I know.
So interesting.
And then it was an animated film,
yeah.
And then the 1939 version. This is what we were talking about in some episode we just recorded that I was like, I really want to slow down on because my, like, film nerd.
Yeah, because we record, like, 10 episodes a week, so we can't remember.
I have no idea when it was or what we were talking about, but it wasn't the first film to be in color, but the scene of going from black and white to color.
Yeah.
I'm getting chills talking about it.
I know.
It can't be overstated how important it was to culture.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's a fantastical, wonderful thing to see at that time, right?
And you, like, just imagine it's movie magic.
People would cheer in the movie theater when it happened. But the impact of that imagery of going black and white into color has been used millions of times since then. Like, think about, like, poems, lyrics, dialogue in movies, like so many references. Like, how many times have you heard a lyric or a piece of dialogue be like, everything was black and white, but then I met you and it's color.
Yes.
Or sometimes they'll even say like Technicolor, which is even more clear. Like think about the importance of that. Like, every time you hear from black and white into color, it's stemming from The Wizard of Oz. That's really important.
It's really amazing. And like, there's an account on TikTok that is all about like factoids about The Wizard of Oz. And I just remember seeing this once, that the way they shot that was they painted everything in the house to be that sepia tone. Mm-hmm. And they had a Judy Garland body double going to open it. They painted her body that sepia color, and they painted the dress that sepia color.
It's like, I'm
and then,
like,
it cuts away, and then Dorothy, like, that, it looks like it's the same person becoming color, but it's actually Judy Garland in the full color dress. Like, it's that movie magic that is so simple that seems like it would be so hard.
And see, and now everything is like, it's kind of hard. I don't mean to be an asshole about it, but like, I know there's been a conversation of like, it's kind of hard to see anything original now. Everything's a remake, everything's a this. But like in 1939, no one had seen, like, well, we have color, like movies that are in color. This is not the first one, but to like the, and what it meant for Dorothy in the movie, because I know it's different in the book, but in the movie, for her to be like lost and then like everything is in black and white and she opens the door and it's this like wonderfully colorful land, like,
I know,
blew people's minds. And we're still referencing it to day, and I'm, you probably don't even, like, people don't even know they're, when they're listening to a song or they see that piece of dialogue, like, but that's what it comes from. I think it's so beautiful and cool and like universal and like connecting all of us.
You were like a film minor in college, right?
Yeah, I had like a, what they call it, like a concentration in film, but I guess a minor.
Oh,
yeah,
that's
same
so
thing.
Cool.
I loved it. I loved it.
Girl, Hydro is back. Hydro is that amazing full body workout on the rowing machine.
Yeah, it is hands down the most efficient workout you'll ever do because it works 86% of your muscles, which is a lot of them.
That is crazy.
It's like one smooth, low impact motion. You're talking like arms, legs, core, everything is engaged, but it's still easy on the joints.
Yeah, I have one. I'm obsessed with it. And now Hydro has taken things to the next level with their newest rower, Hydro Arc. It's their most advanced rower yet, designed to make you stronger, smarter, and more consistent. And can I just tell you, if you're sick of running or you're sick of that exercise bike, get on a Hydro one time. You will never look back.
Let me tell you something about the Arc.
Please.
The Arc introduces Hydrometrics.
Yes.
So it's the first of its kind performance tracking system that actually measures your, wait for it, power. Not just that, endurance.
Yes.
Oh, and how about precision? Each time you row, so you can literally see your strength build over time.
And look, these are immersive workouts filmed on the water with Olympians and world-class athletes in breathtaking locations around the globe. This is not like the days of like going to the gym and putting like on your headphones, which
you can do. Staring at the wall.
No, but these guided rows, I love them so much. I do the one on the Charles in Boston. I can do the 5,000 meter, the 2,000, you can do a 500 meter. Really, it is up to you.
Yeah, and Hydro also backs it all with a 30-day risk-free trial, free standard shipping, and a one-year warranty.
Yeah, fam, skip the gym, not the workout. Stay on track with the new Hydro Arc, Hydro's most advanced rower yet.
For a limited time, go to hydro.com and use code TCO to get $100 off any Hydro rower, including Arc.
That's Hydro, HYDROW.com, code TCO.
Are you kidding with this?
I sit by this.
86%, 86.
Do you hear my joke? I sit by it.
Yo, cute.
We're now in a cafe with some young employee just singing Over the Rainbow like Judy
Happy
Garland.
To do it.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high.
She is
happy to do it.
It's a cafe full of people.
You see the people behind her online looking back a little, and I'm like, "You, hey, Toto, you're in fake Kansas now.
Now we're going to talk about Michael Shaw, the collector. Because what we learned a little while ago was that it was during the 2005 Judy Garland Festival in Grand Rapids that the shoes got stolen.
Yes.
And they were like appraised like $1 million, which I think is way undervalued. And now we meet Michael Shaw. He is the collector who owned the shoes that lent them to the town for many, many years, and then that was like the year that they got stolen.
And here's the thing, there are multiple pairs of these ruby slippers from the movie. But these were screen worn, which means she wore them in the movie, which means they are by far the most valuable. And she wore them the most in the movie.
Exactly.
It's like when she's clicking her heels, there's no place like home. Like, these are the ones.
Yes, exactly.
So he started loaning them to the museum in 1989, specifically to display during this festival.
Which is like so nice of him to do.
Yeah, but between 1989 and 2005, he did it four times.
I guess that's
true. And the fourth time, they were stolen.
Yeah.
And so he explains that he got them in like really beautiful condition. He brought them around the country for years. Like he wasn't just like staring at them in his own house. Like he knew the people wanted to see them. He knew the importance of what they represented and like how much they meant to people.
And he's like a collector. Like Maria, the director, goes to his apartment.
I will never forget the day I met Michael Shaw and, you know, knocking on the door of his apartment, opening the door, and it was like I was in a movie museum. He had one of Dorothy's dresses, he had the Wicked Witch's hat, he had a Maltese Falcon prop from Humphrey Bogart's 1941 film noir.
A Maltese Falcon statue from the movie Noir? Oh, I literally wrote, who cares? You care.
It's from the movie The Maltese Falcon in my noir class. And when this is one of the movies we study.
Oh, really?
Bogey as Sam Spade.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Mary Astor is one of the legendary femme fatales.
Is she like an Astor from the Gilded Age?
Maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Those are the Astors I care about.
I don't know her full history. But it's like the whole point about The Maltese Falcon is that like everyone is trying to get their hands on this like super old, like golden falcon statue that's covered in all these jewels and Bogey's there. And it's like amazing. But this guy like has the Maltese Falcon. And I'm like, how do you have all of these iconic props?
We don't know his tricks. He's also got like the Ten Commandments or whatever.
From the Ten Commandments? Oh my God. Snooze, boring.
I know. I couldn't agree more. But the slippers are obviously his prized possession, right?
Yeah. So four pairs were worn in The Wizard of Oz. One pair belongs to a private collector and we will know nothing more about that.
We'll never be told.
One pair is at the Academy of the Museum of Motion Pictures where they should be.
Yeah.
Another pair is at the Smithsonian. Smithsonian also feels like a very appropriate place to
yes,
be.
Yeah.
And this pair that now used to be Michael's, but now they're missing.
Yes.
Like, so those are the four pairs. So it's like a private collector, two museums,
yeah.
and him. And he's the one who has that there's no place like home, like the
like
screen
the best
worn,
pair.
Like the most valuable.
And then we learned that when he was seven, he met Judy Garland.
So here's what here's how he like started to get all of these props. He says his family was in show business.
Yeah.
He went to MGM's 25th anniversary celebration because MGM was like showing all their movies at the big MGM theater. Because this was like, if you don't know, like part of the studio system
back
in the day.
Yeah.
And so that's like where he saw The Wizard of Oz for the first time. And Judy was there.
I mean, we believe the story.
I think so.
Okay.
He's got a house full of
her shit.
He has like the witch's hat, the dress, the shoes, the falcon. Like this guy like gets his hands on a lot of stuff.
It's true. It's true. And now he talks about the theft and he's just saying the ruby slippers and his in particular are the most valuable piece of movie memorabilia in history. And now they're gone. And he's remarkably calm about it.
Today he is.
Yeah.
So the theft happens August 28th, 2005, the day after Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans.
Woof.
But this is when they start to use a lot of footage from the movie. Like the Wicked Witch being like, they're gone.
I'm always, whenever that happens, I'm like, how did they had to pay for that?
They use it really sparingly. Yeah. I wonder if it fell under fair use
in
some
way. 30 seconds
but this
of
is
it.
Like an ABC News presentation. Like ABC probably
they got
could
the money.
Throw some money
I
at
I guess
this.
That's true. Because they also do recreations and their recreations are actually not bad.
Yeah, they have like a lot of like graphics and stuff.
But we see like they filmed one scene of like Dorothy and the characters on the Yellow Brick Road and it's like filmed with like Vaseline over the camera.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that must have been a fun shooting day.
Yeah, season one of Drag Race.
Yeah.
Filter.
Totally.
So we get this story like four different, like we, oh my God, you're going to fucking kill me. We like Rashomon this. We get four different versions of the story.
Is that a film thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
So sorry, everyone. I'm talking directly to people who give a shit about this, which is, I understand nobody. I totally get it. But so we get it from like the phone call about telling this guy that they were stolen. We will go back and go into the details of
this. Yes.
But like the slippers are gone. They have to make that horrible phone call to Michael Shaw telling him that they'd been stolen.
We get one version where like the museum curator's like,
I had to make the call to Michael Shaw. He wasn't really that upset.
I became physically ill. And I was ill for at least 3 or 4 days. I couldn't eat.
I became physically ill. I couldn't eat. This guy has no sense of humor about this. He's like, these people have one job.
But nor should he. Because like when we get the details on how this went down, it is insane.
And I think
unexcusable.
I think I have questions for everybody,
yeah.
including Michael Shaw, which I don't know if that's allowed, but I do.
I think it's allowed. It's your podcast. You can do whatever you want.
Please.
Ask all the questions.
So Grand Rapids PD is on the case for what it's worth, because we're told by many people this was not a good investigation.
No. That's the other thing. I'm never surprised when they're like, in a case like this, it wasn't a good, like these local cops aren't prepared to like deal with investigating a theft of like a multi-million dollar piece of movie memorabilia.
Yeah, well, Gene Bennett is the original cop on the case. And he's like, well, what do you want me to do? They put an unlocked piece of plexiglass over the shoes. And he's like, someday someone will talk. Are we done?
Yeah, I mean, like, then we get these, like, crazy. There's a lot of local color in this, which I'm kind of grateful for.
Because it's
none of them gay.
Yeah, so it's like the thieves broke in, smashed the plexiglass, which is useless. Not even smash proof, I guess.
Right.
And then they're like, one sequin was found at the scene and no fingerprints.
Which, I gotta say, the fact that a single sequin is found, it comes back at the end. I kind of love it. But we get these theories that like maybe like the thief is storing it in the leg of a pink elephant, which is apparently a thing in this town. And
Whatever. We see
one.
Some little girl is calling being like, I know where the shoes are. They're under the house.
Daisy, get off the phone.
Like, please.
I know. That's insane. That girl needs to be grounded.
Like, come on. People claiming they found them, but then it'll say like made in China on the soles. Like, come on.
Well, right. Because like we get this whole thing where there's like, a house listed for sale and like somebody sees it in the background, which honestly, we see serial killers getting caught because their taillight went out.
Sure.
So I guess I could see something like that happening where it's like, oh, I forgot to put my $2 million stolen ruby slippers back in the bag before taking the picture to sell my house.
Yeah.
Travel down the road back again. Girl, cornbread seltzers are back. Have you heard that more people now consume cannabis than alcohol? Like, my weeknight happy hours prove this point night after night.
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons, but I think a lot of people are kind of sick and tired of the hangover.
Yes.
So, whatever the reason, Cornbread Hemp just launched these incredible THC seltzers. I love them.
People love them so much. My other favorite thing is that they're low calorie with only 30 calories and 5 grams of sugar. Like, think about you're having like a gin and tonic, you have three of those, forget it.
And the thing is, I'm drinking flavored seltzers seltzer anyway.
Yes, totally.
I am a flavored seltzer girly. I always have been. And so Cornbread Hemp's THC seltzers are really on brand for me.
Yeah.
And I don't have a hangover.
Each can has 5 milligrams of THC, which is the perfect amount so you don't feel couch locked or paranoid.
That's not why I'm doing this.
No, it's a perfectly social buzz. I love it.
Yeah, so you can like unwind, you can kick back, you can just enjoy the moment. And it's like without alcohol and without the hangover.
Yeah, also the flavors are insane.
Please.
Blueberry Breeze, which is my favorite. Peach iced tea, raspberry lemonade, and salted watermelon.
Salted watermelon.
Oh, the decadence.
Say more or say less, whatever. Just hand it over.
So fam, right now, TCO listeners can save 30% off their first order and enjoy free shipping on orders over $75.
Head to cornbreadhemp.com/TCO and use code TCO at checkout.
That's cornbreadhemp.com/TCO, code TCO.
Cornbread Hemp. This is the good life.
It really is.
You know what it is.
No hangover equals good life.
Right.
Yeah. Girl, Function is back. Look, I've been using Function. I love it because it's the only health platform that gives me data most people never get. And this is my favorite part, insights to start doing something about it.
Yeah, so inside Function, you get access to test over, wait for it, 100 plus biomarkers.
Yep.
From hormones to toxins to markers of heart health or inflammation or stress.
Yeah, for an additional fee, fam, you can also access MRI and chest CT scans, all tracked in one secure place over time. It's a near 360-degree view to better see what's happening in your body. And honestly, who doesn't want that, especially as we're getting older?
Right, and that's why top health leaders like Dr. Mark Hyman, Dr. Andrew Huberman, and Dr. Jeremy London are all behind Function Health.
Yeah. So, girl, you know I've been on the GLP-1s for a couple of years now, right?
Yes.
That can affect bone density. And this is one of the biomarkers you can look at in Function, right? So indicators like bone mineral density and muscle mass influenced by key nutrients such as vitamin D and magnesium, which support strong bones and muscle function. And you can see all of this laid out in the dashboard. You can see how you're doing. And if you're not doing great, they give you the things to do to fix it.
Yeah, because you kind of have to see the results. You know
yes.
what I mean? You have to kind of see and be like, oh, okay. Because you could really make yourself crazy in your head. It's nice to see it in the dashboard.
1,000,000%.
You don't want to gaslight yourself into feeling bad.
No. Or feeling good.
Right. Or that.
You know
we just
I mean?
Want honesty.
Exactly.
Is what we want.
So fam, learn more and join using our link.
Function is a near 360 view to see what's happening in your body. And our first 1,000 listeners get a $100 credit toward their membership.
Visit functionhealth.com/TCO or use gift code TCO100 at sign up to own your health.
That's right. I'm going to own it.
Own it.
Own it.
Bone density is like a thing I have to care about now.
Okay, great. But now you know.
But now I know it's true.
This is when we kind of get back on track because the museum director is like, look.
We did offer precautionary measures. We asked U.S. Bank in town to donate a safe. We could slip them out of the case, put them in the safe each night. And we asked Michael Shaw, he would not agree to having them handled every day.
Michael Shaw, the owner, said no.
Now, here's what makes me crazy. There is clearly no contract between the collector and the museum because the museum should not have allowed the shoes to be there without the provision that they are going to be under lock and key all night long.
So he said no because he didn't want them being touched so much.
Which I understand.
Yes.
But then they have to have, look, this festival goes on for what, a week, maybe 2 weeks?
No, 3 days.
There needs to be round the clock security for these slippers.
Now, here's what I don't understand. I don't mean to be a dick. I don't know Michael Shaw's situation. The festival was 3 days. Like,
yeah.
He didn't want to keep an eye on them. He didn't want to hire someone to keep an eye on them.
Right.
And Michael Shaw's like, well, I was told the place was secure. And I'm like, okay, it was a miscommunication here, and I don't know where it was.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know if he was told it was secure or if it was just his understanding. Because I'm like, why is this not like, okay, if I'm going to lend you the slippers, here's the protocol. And he doesn't say that, and then everyone is fucking shy. I just don't understand. Like, you've had these since the 70s, like, what am I missing?
For me, this is the absolute worst example of we didn't lock the doors in our neighborhood until we were told we had to. It's like, everybody is so naive to think that no one's going to steal them because they're a piece of, like, American history and American culture, and they're too loved to be stolen.
And it's, like, her hometown. It's the museum.
But
it's,
like... I was texting with you earlier about, like, this feels so much like the Gardner art to me. Like, you know, like, the fact that it was so beloved and the fact that they're just going to take advantage of your naivety. Like, of course. Of course they're going to be stolen.
And it gets worse because the museum director tells us something insane.
This makes you especially crazy.
May I take it?
Should I leave the room?
No.
Should I go outside?
It's okay, because I will have to be stopped eventually.
Not by me, girl. I'm not doing that.
They had so mad. I get it. It's a museum. I get it. Actually, I don't get it. I don't know why I say that. Scratch that. Remove it from the record. They had so many kids running around.
There's supposed to have been an alarm that you know, it was on that door. Kel said, we shut it off. And I said, you shut the alarm off?
We had children going out our emergency exit doors.
He said, we forgot to turn it back on.
They thought the best idea was to turn off the alarm. So not a parent in sight.
Yeah.
And the museum thought the best idea was to disable the alarm instead of telling the kids and parents that what they're doing is not allowed.
Yes.
I want to slow down on this for a second.
Even slower. We got it. We're with you.
It's not just that the kids were running around.
Yeah.
It's not just that the kids were running around and there were no parents stopping them.
Uh-huh.
It's not just that the kids were running around and there were no parents stopping them and the museum staff wasn't stepping in.
Uh-huh.
Because God knows.
Yeah.
You'd have to deal with the obnoxious kids and their obnoxious parents. Uh-huh. And in this situation, if you're like, I can't tell the kid to stop running in and out of the fucking emergency door, making the alarm go off so often.
Can I just interrupt you to say,
sure.
I'm a pretty lenient parent. Like when I'm with Daisy on the weekends and she's doing something that's not hurting anybody, that's kind of annoying, I'll let her do it. This is not one of those things.
Like,
this is beyond the pale.
Right. Because if you come for me about this, argue with the wall. But if your child is running around a museum with million-dollar artifacts in them, making the emergency alarm go off that many times, you're the problem.
100%.
Like, I don't care if it was the emergency exit at McDonald's.
Yeah.
If it's happening so often that the museum staff is like, we should just turn it off, you're having a real fucking bad parenting day.
Yeah. Just to bring it back to the theft here, everybody, including the guy who donated the slippers, is 100% at fault. Like, and even if it's, forget it, how annoying it is to have that emergency exit alarm going off every 2 seconds to the point where they have to turn it off. It is an actual liability. And there should be, like, there needs to have been a contract between the guy who donated it and the museum to protect everybody. And the idea that an emergency exit could be, nobody understood A, how valuable the shoes were, and B, how completely vulnerable they were to an attack like this.
Right, like I was just thinking, I was like, I'm sorry, so I'm following.
Yeah.
You have been trusted with one of the most valuable pop culture artifacts in history.
Yes, yes.
Like you can think this is all stupid, but that's a fact. Like it's one of the most valuable pop culture things in history. You're gonna let kids run wild, disable the alarm, and then forget to turn it back on when you leave?
But, and that's insane. This is just people who are not taking their jobs seriously.
Because that also means like, oh, so there's no like closing up protocol?
Uh-huh.
Like there's no checklist of things you could do. You just like forgot.
But like if you think about it, even in the context of the Gardner Museum, they stole $500 million worth of art because the museum didn't think that they needed to take their security protocols very seriously. It's like, it really is the whole like, we didn't lock our doors until we had, it's crazy.
Like even the museum director is like, in hindsight, we should add a camera. But, I guess my question once again to Michael Shaw is like, you said this is your most prized possession.
Yeah.
Even personally.
Yes.
Like, ignore the fact that it is a piece of culture and history in general. But, like, it means a lot to him personally.
No, I couldn't agree more.
I'm just curious why he didn't do that. And we don't, no one asks or answers that
And we don't get
here.
That.
Also, how did it get there? Did he, like, trust UPS with the slippers?
I know.
That's really what it, because my thought is, sorry, we're going back for a second, but my thought is, Michael, if you're going to get them there yourself, you can just hang around. It's a 3-day festival.
I know. I've said this a thousand times, but it seems so simple that you just get an armed guard for 3 days.
That's it.
24 hours. Like, that does not cost that much money.
Business.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
That's it.
Now we learn the emergency exit alarm is disabled, but also the motion detector, there's a motion detector that doesn't cover the entire space.
As you come through the door up high, you would have to hug the wall from the time you entered the building through that door all the way to the door that led to where the slippers were kept. That gives me a clue that somebody had been in there and knew that line was up there. No doubt in my mind, somebody cased it out. How would they know to hug the wall?
Got to hug the wall. And I'm like, pretty useless sensor.
I know.
And they're telling us this because they're saying the person knew how to avoid the sensor, so someone had to have cased the joint.
Yeah.
So all of these people are useless. So now we meet Bob.
Oh, my God.
He's the insurance broker. So the owner of the slippers, Michael Shaw, had a $1 million policy on the slippers. So I'm sure the answer is, hey, Jillian, you dummy. He has a $1 million policy. It kind of doesn't matter. But then I'm like, but personally, you love them. It's your most prized possession.
100% he cares more about the slippers. Cooper's in the money.
He has to.
100%.
So why are... Oh,
and it's just everyone's just trusting each other. You know what I mean? Everyone's like, the museum is...
In 2005? It's not 1905.
I know, but it's just like, I think the mindset was like, no one would dare. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they would.
I know. Well, you and I know.
I know.
This shit that you and I know after nine years of doing this...
Too much.
Truly, we can solve murders.
It's bad. We've gone around the bend. We've overcorrected.
Why has nobody made that sitcom? You and I solving murders.
Oh, God. I don't know. Because they already have a perfect show and it's called Columbo. And he solves them all.
Gillian Anderson and John Candy star.
Oh, my God. So, there's a $1 million insurance policy on the slippers. And the policy was taken out in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. So he's doing it specifically like for this weekend.
This poor guy who just wishes he had never, ever heard of The Wizard of Oz, even though it's his favorite movie.
The insurance company, which held the policy on the shoes, argued they shouldn't have to cover the loss since the museum shut off the door alarm and allegedly didn't have functioning motion detectors or video surveillance.
First of all, they sued the museum and the museum director personally, which made me laugh so hard. The way he's like, he sued me personally.
But wait, to be clear about that, the guy who donated the slippers, didn't sue the museum or anybody involved.
No, the insurance company doesn't want to pay.
Yeah.
Because they say, rightly so, you disabled your own alarm.
I know. And I agree with them.
What are you calling me for?
But I do think it's kind of amazing that Mark, the guy who donated the slippers, did not sue the museum. That seems, I don't know why he didn't sue that.
I don't know. I guess because the insurance does pay Michael Shaw over $800,000.
Yeah.
So I guess he's like, well.
Yeah. Because we're going to learn at some point in here, he paid like $2,500 for these slippers.
And another interesting question. I'm not victim blaming. I know it's the idiots who let the kids run wild and like turn off the alarm. I get it. And the people who stole it are the only people to blame. Like, fine. Except don't disable the alarm and then forget to turn it off when you have $1 million artifacts.
Everyone needs to be fired.
But my question is like, he was just like trusting the Grand Rapids police to do this. Like, he didn't hire a private investigator that we hear of.
He didn't do
any investigation of his own that we hear of. Again, it's his most prized possession.
It feels like you must just decide that they're just gone forever.
I just have a lot of questions that are not being answered here.
I know.
One of them is, where is Jinx Monsoon? Let's talk more about the slips. Gilbert Adrian was one of the most premier costume designers of the time.
Yes.
And this is where we learn.
Many people don't realize that the slippers were originally silver. You see here it says silver shoes. And this is before they had changed them to ruby.
So they had to experiment at Technicolor to find a shade of red that would photograph ruby, and they found that burgundy photographed a beautiful ruby red, and so actually they're the burgundy shoes.
So the slippers in the book were silver, but they were red in the film to take advantage of the new technology.
Yeah.
Now, they are also silver in Wicked on the stage version and in the movie.
They are?
Because the ruby slipper design is copyrighted by MGM, so legally they can't.
No way!
Yeah. So MGM, like, had this genius idea for the Technicolor and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, made it. They really wanted them to pop, and that red, that burgundy maroon color really popped as red. And so they were like, this is ours forever.
That's so interesting.
So legally they can't.
And it's funny because when you see the slippers themselves, they aren't that pretty because the color looks great on
how
film.
Dare you.
I agree because we see in the end, like we'll get there when we get there, but I think they look kind of dingy. And like,
well,
and
they're
a million years old, but the color looks, it's a burgundy color that for whatever reason under the lights
pops
at like your hair does, you know? But like when you see them in real life, they don't glimmer like they do in the movie.
No, and they add, you know, that shot of her like, and then she's like, Oh my God, I'm getting, like, I can't even talk about this movie without getting emotional.
That's wild.
Yeah. So art memorabilia theft, we have to talk about for 15 minutes. We get it. It happens all the time.
You know,
it's a billion dollar
shit,
business,
yeah.
You know, especially like things from movies like The Wizard of Oz and the Saturday Night Fever dance floor.
We learn again about the FBI Art Crimes Division. And I'm like, that's a dream job. Like, you get to like go after the Gardner art for your entire career.
I know.
God, I would find it.
You would.
I don't know. It's in a Dunkin' somewhere. It's in, like in a Dunkin' in Back Bay.
It's in some mobster's downstairs.
You looked
theater.
At me dead eyes and said I would. You believe that I would find
it. Of course
it.
You, yeah.
Oh.
Why wouldn't I believe that?
I don't know, because even I said it with a little bit of like, would I?
I just don't think you'd be happy with what you found. You know what I mean?
You're totally right.
I don't think it would be, it's not like in pristine condition.
Someday.
If it's anywhere.
I'm to the point now where I just want an answer.
Yeah.
Get justice for Rembrandt is how I feel.
Whatever. So Kent Warner was a costumer and he went to that big MGM auction in 1970 that Michael Shaw went to when they were selling honestly, like if it wasn't nailed down and even if it was, they'd still sell it to you.
Totally.
So he wanted the ruby slippers and other artifacts. And then Michael Shaw, the current owner now, like worked out a deal with him.
I was in the right place at the right time, and I worked out a deal with him for the shoes the dress, the witch's hat, a few other things. When I saw the shoes, and I'm not lying to you, Maria, I started to cry.
It's reported that Shaw was able to get his screen-used pair of Judy's rubies for just $2,500.
$2,500.
And like this Ken Warner guy, it's just beyond. Like this Ken Warner guy, well, like just to talk about him for a second, he seems to have been like a visionary who understood that there was value in these props, just he didn't know how much value.
Yeah.
Because they sell everything. We learned that the Cowardly Lion costume went for like $3 million.
But like the boat from the Love Boat or whatever?
No, from Showboat.
From Showboat?
Yeah.
Was sold for like
$15,000.
Is that all?
Yeah, it seems like not a lot.
For like a big boat? Like
I know.
That?
But I think that it was like, you know, back then, I think people loved the, but we just didn't memorabilia. They say that this auction invented the word memorabilia.
Yeah.
Like, that's wild.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I love things. Like, I love historical things like this.
Totally.
And I think all the time, a couple of years ago, there was an online auction where handwritten letters by Harvey Milk came up for auction. Mm-hmm. And it was expensive, but not that expensive. And I didn't buy them. And I regret it to this day.
Really?
And I've got a Google alert set for if they ever come back online. Like, I just love.
There was a full collection that someone bought all of them, or was it just like two?
It was just letter, and he was talking about gay marriage, like in like the 70s or something. Like,
do you know who bought it?
No, because it was like it's like a private thing or whatever. But like, you know, I there's this gay historian that you know I'm obsessed with. His name is Craig Rodwell, and you can go to the New York Public Library, and like he donated boxes and boxes and boxes of his shit, and like you can just go through his personal letters. You can touch them with your hands. They don't even make you wear gloves.
Really? They should.
They should. But like you're touching like the stuff that like he it was. His
oh my God!
Stuff.
Of
and like, so I get it. I understand why this memorabilia stuff is so. I think it's so fascinating.
It is. It totally is.
Girl, Quince is back. Look, fall is in full swing, and it's the perfect time to refresh your wardrobe with pieces that feel as good as they look.
Let me tell you something. You know I love fall, but something I'm going to tell you about is all year round.
Please.
It's that nylon crossbody bag.
Yes.
I love it. I wear it everywhere. It's the perfect size for like your phone, like a little makeup bag, your keys, whatever.
Yes.
I love this so much.
So look, I love a fall sweater. Think about their 100% Mongolian cashmere starting at $50. They've also got washable silk tops and skirts and perfectly tailored denim, all at prices that feel too good to be true. It's true. It is really reasonably priced.
Yeah, and they tell you too, where it's like on other sites, it would be this.
Yes.
But here on our site, you're paying this.
Totally.
And it makes it, it's like a little extra bonus.
Totally.
Like, oh, I'm getting something I love. Wait, and I'm saving X amount of money. I'm in.
Well, and look, they do that by partnering directly with ethical top tier factories and cutting out the middlemen. And they do this to deliver luxury quality pieces at half the price of similar brands.
Yeah, it's the kind of wardrobe upgrade that feels smart, stylish, and effortless, which you are, dear listener.
Fall, get out there.
Don't ask me how I know. I just know.
You just know. So fam, keep it classic and cozy this fall with long-lasting staples from Quince.
Go to quince.com/TCO for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/TCO to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/TCO. So now we're taking a detour for no other reason other than, I guess, they just wanted to talk about this guy and the fact that he makes ruby slippers.
Oh, yeah. We meet this guy. Maybe gay. We don't know. He calls himself the Wicked Witch, and our director finds him because she finds a classified ad where he's looking to buy. She thinks he's trying to buy the ruby slippers on the black market. No.
He creates high-end replicas that are hard to tell apart from the real slippers.
I started making them when I was probably 11 or 12. I have a hard time, like, picking a favorite character in the movie, but I think I most identify with the Wicked Witch, only because how badly she wanted the shoes.
He creates high-end replicas.
That he started doing when he was like 11 years old.
He sells them for $3,000 each.
And we're watching him do it, and you can see how much he loves it. Like,
he loves it. I was on his website today. Commissions are closed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, maybe. I think maybe at like the beginning of next year, he'll start taking commissions for the following year. But he's like,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Find a thing you love to do and go do it.
And I was looking at them now, and he's like, oh, you can get this version and this version. Or just like his website now is just like, here's all the cool stuff I've made.
Yeah.
Which was very cool to look at, but he is not, if you're interested, he is not making replicas anymore.
Well, and stay tuned. So, we'll come back to him in the end. He's got a pretty cool cap at the end of the story.
So now we have to talk about this random informant. He's in shadow. Everything about him reminded me of Sean Eckhart. Do you remember Sean Eckhart? He was one of the guys with Gillooly who orchestrated the attack on Nancy Kerrigan.
Yeah.
And he wanted everyone to think he was this like espionage expert.
Totally.
But he was always like, oh, my enemies. Like, it's this guy.
Oh, my God.
It reminds me so much of him because he wants to meet Maria.
He's the guy that clubbed Nancy Kerrigan.
He's the guy who was like hired. He wanted everyone to think he was Tonya Harding's bodyguard.
Right.
And so, but anyway, this guy meets Maria in a hallway between a bar and an antique store. I'm like, ooh, spooky.
I'm like, are we getting gay? Is it getting gay up here?
No, it's certainly not.
It's not
gay. He's like, I run in very dangerous circles.
I know.
And of course, the first thing I thought of was Jill Zarin. I run a fabulous circle of people. But he's like, oh, my trusted officers. It's very Sean Eckhart. Everything's like my associates, my espionage, my enemies. And he goes on and on, like, just walk away. It's going to get real. And I'm like, what are we doing?
What are we doing?
This could be a 40-minute episode.
We skipped over it, but we got to talk about the fact that Maria's last name is Oz, A-W-E-S.
Yes.
And like, I think that's kind of cool.
It is cool. She has to keep confirming what she loves doing.
I know.
Not like Oz.
It's not OZ, unfortunately. You
know, zero info from this guy. It's a total waste of time.
Yeah.
But then something kind of interesting finally happens. They're interviewing one of the cops, and you hear the producer on the other side of the camera go like, oh, hey, can we, when we get back from break, like, can we talk about that call you got from that ex-Secret Service guy?
Yeah.
And the cop's like, the what now?
Yeah.
And the producer's like, you know, that search warrant. Turns out, the production team found a search warrant that was supposed to be sealed, but wasn't.
Keep
up the good work, everybody.
This is unbelievable because we see the police guy being interviewed, like his eyes go wide. This guy's got no fucking poker face.
And so then we hear him whispering. Yeah. Like, okay.
But well, because she did that thing where she was told to turn the camera off and she didn't.
She just put it down. She's like, it's the off light. So he's like.
Which I would totally fall for. You know I would fall for an off light any day of the week.
So this is huge.
Patrick, turn on the off light.
Yeah.
That has to stay confidential, but we will give you the first information. We'll give you the story when it happens. The court's messed up because we sealed that document. But I'll tell you, you cannot say anything because the FBI is huge in that. No, the second we find the shoes, as long as you keep it quiet, we will call you first.
I'll give you the exclusive when we solve this bad boy.
Yeah.
So here's what's going on.
Maria's a woman of her word. She keeps that secret.
Well, that's what a real journalist would do, right?
Well, because I'm like, wait, if he asked her to keep the secret, why are we learning about this now? Oh, there's two timelines here.
Right. So on July 11th, 2017, this tip comes in.
Yes.
And Michael Isabella calls, and he's a retired Secret Service agent for Ronald Reagan, and he's asking about the award. Well, boo, major boo, but like, Maria thinks that working as a Secret Service agent 30 years ago somehow makes him extremely credible in 2017. And I'm like,
I know.
Politics aside, I'm like, what?
I know.
First of all,
what?
An asshole is an asshole. Like, you can be a piece of shit no matter what job you have.
Although, if we're dealing in Republican presidents, I'd go back to Reagan over what we got any day.
I mean,
we don't
please.
Have to do this
it's
now.
It's a different time, honestly.
Yeah.
But like, I'm like, 30 years can change a person.
For sure.
But I'm like, so he was in the Secret Service that one time 30 years ago. And she's like, I believe every single word that comes out of this guy's mouth.
Well, I will say, though, like, what we're learning here is that this guy has access to the shoes. He's got access to the slips.
Because he calls, he's like, what's the reward here? Like, right. What's going on with the reward?
Just asking for, just curious. Remember those ruby slippers that went missing?
There's also some unknown middleman.
Yes.
And this is where we start to meet about 38 different people, only one or two of them might be actually important and worth remembering.
Correct.
Even in my notes, I was like, another person?
No, I know. It took me like the second time watching it. It doesn't matter. The point is the shoes might be out there. And now the cops ask for proof of like before. If we're going to negotiate or talk about this at all, send us photos. And they do. And the photos look good. Like they look like these really could be the slippers.
And I also want to say one important note. The $1 million reward is, they say it's long gone. There's only $200,000 from the insurance company because they gave $800,000 to Michael Shaw, the owner. So if someone's calling for the $1 million reward, that doesn't exist, girl. You're getting 200 grand at most.
Because that's what we're told. We're told that this guy wants to do the right thing. He wants to get the shoes back, but he wants the reward money.
Right. So he only kind of wants to do the right thing.
Exactly. 100%. And this guy says on the phone to whoever he's talking to, 200 grand is not going to cut it. For 200 grand, these shoes might go missing again for another 10 years, or they might just get destroyed.
Right. And then they also want us to think that these guys calling the cops are mob guys. Like, the mob would ever go to the cops to broker a deal.
I know. And it gets a little convoluted, but we're also going to learn that these people who are reaching out with the slippers.
The middleman with the slippers thought he was only dealing with the insurance company. but he was wrong.
They did not know they were talking to the FBI or Grand Rapids Police Department.
They think that they're on the phone with the insurance people who absolutely did not involve the cops or the FBI. They're just dealing bad guy to insurance guy. That is not what fucking happens because the FBI is here.
The FBI is here because the Grand Rapids cops are like, we might be just the teeny tiniest bit out of our element here. We're going to call in the FBI for help.
We're going to call in the FBI, but they also call in the U.S. attorney from North Dakota, and they never explain why. They say there's a conflict of interest, so Grand Rapids, Minnesota can't be involved. We're going to go to our neighbors to the north.
We're going to Fargo
to find this adorable guy, Matthew Greenlee, wearing a bow tie. I was like, he got dressed for this interview.
Talk about having no sense of humor.
No sense of humor, but you know what he did do? Remember when we used to ask people to run the combs through their hairs?
He did that. He did.
And I love a bow tie on a man. I could not remember his name going forward. I call him Cute Prosecutor.
Okay, great. So this middleman guy they're all talking to the feds, but no one knows that. And so they make a deal. The feds make a deal with these guys for $400,000. And it's all fake. It's a sting.
Thank you. I was going to talk about it for 5 minutes, but you nailed it.
It's a sting.
It's just a sting. The bad guys think they're bringing the slippers to meet with the insurance people. And when they get there.
So you're going
to
say it anyway. I wasted about 40 minutes talking about film bullshit.
Yeah. Okay, no, you're right. I was mostly doing it for me. My brain had to catch up,
but you're right. Been there.
Moving on.
So it's 2018. It's the sting. The guy chose an art gallery for the meetup. The place is crawling with feds and agents and cops. He's got no idea.
It's like the guy that shows up is this kind of like famous dirtbag attorney. He's like the middleman.
Joe Friedberg. He's Minnesota's most famous criminal defense attorney.
But like, he doesn't know. This guy should be so much smarter.
He should be better at this.
He thinks he's meeting with the insurance people.
He was provided an actual cashier's check for $400,000. He actually left them while he went to the restroom. When he returned, the undercover FBI agents had been replaced by the actual detectives in the case, and they interviewed Mr. Friedberg.
He gets up and goes to pee, leaves the slippers.
And the FBI is like, we almost took them right there.
Should we take them?
Like,
just
should we just go?
Teach this fucking guy a lesson?
Right. So we're like, okay, well, great. Like, who is the thief? We just are told that probably the thief is Kent Anderson, brother of comedian Louis Anderson. And I'm like,
now,
Louis Anderson.
This guy, and we learn that Louis Anderson talks about this guy in his routines.
His like criminal, his criminal brother.
The safe breaker or whatever.
Right. Because Kent Anderson is what they call a fence. He buys and sells stolen goods. And his lawyer is Joe, who like leaving everything on the table, Joe.
To go take a piss.
Right.
And apparently this Anderson, Kent Anderson, is like a really big deal in the underground in Minnesota.
But then it's like, is he involved? Is he not? We'll never know. He died in 2007.
And they tell us that over and over and over again. They're like, once again, we'll never know. He took his secrets to the grave.
And this is the first time I ask, why is this 10 hours long? Where is Jinx Monsoon?
I know. Or any gay. I'll
like,
take any gay
like
at this
anybody.
Point.
So, yay, the shoes are real. Like, we know that the handoff worked.
I thought this was kind of cool because we meet this cool lady, Dawn Wallace, from the FBI, and she's kind of explaining how they knew it was real because they remember she's with the Smithsonian and they have a pair of the slippers in their collection.
Yeah.
And she said the first thing she saw,
I see a clear bead that has been painted red. And it was this sort of eureka moment because I remember seeing those on the shoes in the museum's collection. We had spent time talking with costumers. And they said that if the bead had come off during the filming and if they didn't have time to go get a new red bead, well, it would be fine. They would get a clear bead, paint it red.
We would grab clear ones and paint them and put them on. And that was one of the clues that Dawn was like, this was how we knew they were real.
Also, these idiots were like, wait. So there's like no rubies on them?
Right.
I mean, my God.
These idiot thieves they don't know a gay person. They've never heard of Jinx Monsoon.
No, they hate gay people.
They hate the gays. They absolutely think that these are slippers made of rubies.
Like, that there's just two enormous rubies, essentially.
Two enormous, exactly.
Girls. So at least we have them back, right? And so the FBI, we get this press conference and the local cops are like, the FBI's taking all the credit for this. And I'm like, do they? Because we clearly hear the agent say that they work so closely with the cops in Grand Rapids. And I'm like, look, I know the trope. I totally get it.
But
she literally is like, we would not be here if not for the local cops. And I'm like,
but
girl.
The local cop is at the press conference. He grabs
whispering.
A reporter to be like, this is not what happened. This is not how this went down. I'm going to tell you everything later.
Fucking go again.
And then we cut to Michael, the collector, who has been now told by the FBI that the shoes have been found. And he goes,
I mean, thank God the shoes were not destroyed. But heaven only knows how many feet went into that pair of shoes between then and 13 years later now.
Heaven only knows how many pairs of feet went into those shoes over 13
Michael,
years.
Michael, then hire someone to watch them
I
then.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I get it.
Yeah.
I get that you're upset, but, like, I don't understand why there wasn't at least one piece of paper that's like, could you make sure that you don't disable the alarm and then forget to turn it on when you leave?
Like, in 2005, it would have cost $30 an hour to hire a security person to stand there and make sure this didn't happen.
It's like one of the biggest, whatever. So the shoes were
you
stolen.
You can't go through all that again. I can't put you through it again.
Please. So the shoes were stolen 13 years ago, but since they don't know who stole them, the shoes are now sitting in an evidence locker at the FBI. They're not handed back to their owner.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Like, doesn't everybody want to go home?
I know. Can we talk about the Rockwell heist for a second?
If we must.
I want to because it's an art thing and it's Norman Rockwell and I love those two things.
Yeah, it doesn't relate to this at all, but I'm happy to talk about it.
We take a quick detour because we learn about the Rockwell heist. This was an art heist that happened 200 miles away from where the slippers were stolen in 1978, the year of my birth. And basically, we learned that, like, it was a kind of a similar situation where this art gallery was doing this, like, huge opening for, like, Norman Rockwell. And they had all 332 of his Saturday Evening Post covers. They had some limited editions, but also original Norman Rockwell paintings.
Yeah.
Like, I love this shit so much. And sometime before, like, they do this big opening, it goes great, it's gorgeous. And then sometime before midnight, somebody breaks in and steals all of the most expensive Norman Rockwells and a fake Renoir.
They stole the 7 most valuable original paintings and a Renoir for the road.
Which they then are Renoir for the road.
You know.
It's a Renoir roadie.
Right.
It's
yes. Like, road soda. Yeah.
The look on your face, I did not think I was going to get there.
I love a road
Renoir roadie.
It's annoying to say.
It's very That's hard. All. But then I love that we do learn that eventually all the art is returned, but, like, they find it in Philadelphia and Brazil.
But I'm like, wait, this gallery was showing a fake Renoir?
They didn't know. It was found out later after it was stolen and returned that it was
fake. But that's
fake.
A big deal.
It
and
is
no one
a big
seems
deal.
To care about that part, that they were tricked.
We've covered so many fake art documentaries. I want a fake. I want to buy a fake Renoir.
I'm promise you, you can get them.
I've looked. You can't really find them.
Well, because no one wants to say that they're fake.
Right. I guess that's true. Steve, can we spend $500 million on a painting that may or may not be real?
No, girl.
I guess not. But this has nothing to do with anything except that these are not the people who then stole the Ruby
slippers.
They
think that maybe Louis Anderson's brother was involved, but it doesn't matter. He was never charged and he's dead now. Like, what are we doing here?
We do keep getting...
Who gives a shit?
We get Louis Anderson's brother's kid on the phone and every time Maria's like, do you think your dad was involved? He's like, he absolutely
100%.
He absolutely did
and
it.
I'm like, okay.
He's like the kid of all the mob wives who just want to be connected to crime in any way.
Like,
or like the nephew of
desperate to be his dad, for his dad to be the Zodiac killer.
That's exactly what I was just going to say.
Like, girl,
I know.
It's just not. So anyway, this Joe the middleman guy keeps coming up. That criminal defense lawyer who met the cops in the Sting and literally handed them the stolen ruby slippers. So
and did not get that $400,000 like, check because he had to go pee.
And then I'm like, but wait, now there's someone else?
I know.
Terry John Martin, he's a retired mobster on his deathbed, complete with oxygen tank.
The thing is, because now we learn, like, the whole end of this documentary is about who actually did it. We got them back. That's great. Who actually did it? And we learn, like, just to give it to you in, like, 3 minutes, we learn it was two men, both of them on their deathbeds now, both of them having been arrested and showing up to court in oxygen tanks. And basically, it's Terry and Jerry. And the only reason I know that is because that is also the name of my mother's ex-girlfriend and her new wife.
Perfect.
Terry and Jerry. And these two fucking dingbats, to borrow a phrase, they get to the museum on the night of the heist. They break in. They smash the case. They get the slippers. They are out in literally 30 seconds.
So the unruly children were just a happy coincidence?
100%.
Only happy for them?
Yeah, exactly.
Because everyone else is miserable.
But they're in the van making their getaway. They get pulled over. Jerry stuffs the ruby slippers down his pants. The cops try to search the van, but they don't have probable cause, so they can't.
And he's like, no, I don't give you consent to search.
No, and they speed off into the night.
Yeah.
And this guy, Jerry, we meet Jerry's next door neighbor, Jerry. You cannot make it up. And Jerry, the neighbor, is like, Jerry the thief, he was such a nice guy. I really liked him. One day, the feds fucking swarm his house. This guy, Jerry, had the slippers in his possession from 2005 until 2018 when they were recovered.
He put them in his garage in the soffit, like the eaves overhanging the outside of his garage, for years, and then later buries them in his yard. He buried them in a clear Tupperware-type container.
They were there. They were right there in Grand Rapids the whole time. It was a local guy named Jerry hanging out with this guy named Terry, happens to be the name of my mom's ex-girlfriend and her new wife.
Oh my God. And so then, like, nothing happens to any of these guys because they're all dead or dying.
And that to me was the wildest part, was that, like, nobody really gets in trouble. We know who did it. We know how they did it. They show up to court with an oxygen tank, then die. But, like, in the meantime, they don't get any jail time.
Yeah, like Jerry was going to plead guilty, but he died before he could. Then Mike, the former Secret Service guy, died 4 years after the slippers were returned, never charged with anything.
No.
Joe, the criminal lawyer, returned the shoes, also dead, also never charged, maintains he never did anything wrong.
Everyone fucking died.
Everyone's dead.
Why isn't this called the Curse of the Ruby Slippers?
Like, seriously, though, because it would be too good.
Yeah.
Then February 1st, 2024, those shoes are returned to Michael Shaw. Technically, the insurance company owned the shoes, but they, quote, allowed him to buy them back for $800,000, which is their exact payout to him.
I think that Michael does the smart thing here. He takes them on, like, one last world tour.
Well, it is very emotional, though. Like, once he gets them back, like, it's been 20 years.
And
like,
this is how the documentary is good, because Maria, the documentary filmmaker, is with him in 2024. So all of the footage of him until now is from 2018. We see him in 2024, he's aged like 100 years, and he sees the slippers for the first time, and he is sobbing.
Yeah.
And he decides to sell them. He decides to put them up for auction, and the people from the museum, they've raised a certain amount of money. They really want to bring the slippers home to Minnesota. They think they've got a shot.
But the bidding starts, right? The bidding starts.
$1.5 million.
And the price is going up and up. $7 million, $8 million, $9 million, $10, $11, $12, and it just keeps going.
All bids in now. All bids. Fair warning. No cut bids. No other advances. Then do it. $28 million. Ladies and gentlemen, the Ruby Slippers just sold for $28 million.
They are sold for $28 million, a total of $32.5 million with the fees.
Yeah.
The previous record was Marilyn's subway dress.
And my thing, too, is, like, part of the reason the slippers are so valuable is because of the story of them being stolen. Like, it added so much value to the value of the slippers, which, remember, Michael bought for $2,500.
What do you think they would have gone for in an auction in 2024, 25, if they weren't stolen?
Like $2 million.
Do you think?
I don't think they would have got, well, no, you know what the difference would be?
What?
The movie Wicked. Like, the movie Wicked made, I think, brought all of this back. Oh, and the other thing we didn't tell you about, that gay guy who's making the shoes that you can't buy anymore, he found online Glinda's original wand
from
the movie, and he bought it for $20,000, and he tells this whole story.
But the thing is, keeping something that historically important and expensive, I did not really plan for that, and I just could not afford to keep it long-term. Ended up selling for $400,000.
You have to be able to keep it, really. People are going to steal it.
That's why I'm shocked that you're even allowed to touch those Craig Rodwell pieces of paper. Because, like, oil on hands,
even
if you just wash your hands, like, you're still, like, it could really, like, deteriorate.
But he ends up selling, he bought it for $20,000 and turned around and sold it for $400,000.
That's
why he's not making shoes anymore.
No, but he said, like, when Ariana Grande was on the Drew Barrymore show, like, that was it.
Yes, they brought it out to her.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. That's the story. That's the story of the Ruby Slippers.
So they're bad. Like, someone has them and we don't know who has them, but someone bought them for what is a total of $32.5 million.
It's funny because we, in the very end, we see them being taken off the auction block and put into, like, a protected, locked, like, transport case.
Where they always should have been.
Well, and
something
I'm like,
that locks.
I cannot wait to hear the story about how they got swapped and that wasn't really them.
God.
And you know what I mean?
I wonder if, I'm not just saying this because a lot of people that we're talking about have now died, but I wonder if, like, if that's when we'll find out, like, what's the protocol with a big sale like this at an auction, if it's like some old rich person and then they die in 3 years from now, like, will we be able to know that, like, they purchased it, or does it go for, like, eternity?
Who knows?
Is it a secret forever and ever?
Because even if we did find out who it was, it'd be like Brian Johnson of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Some Merrill Lynch or whatever.
Totally. Like, some queen. You know, it's some gay guy.
Please God.
Elton John.
Someone.
Oh my God, it's probably Elton John.
It's probably Elton John. 32.5 mil.
Oh,
it's got to be Elton.
Girl, we did, what's it called?
Ruby Red-Handed.
Oh my goodness, that was a fun one.
It was fun. It was fun to be in that world for a little bit.
I do like it when film nerd Jillian comes out. I enjoy it.
Look, this is why I love talking about stuff like Mad Men. Like, I just love talking about stuff that people made and, like, how it makes you feel and then how it, like, seeps into culture and other conversations that you don't know about. Like, I just think that's so, it's so, like, brings us all together, you know?
Do you think Neil Patrick Harris has the 32 mil? Could it be him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has that, what was that show, Big Bang? What was it?
No, How I Met Your Mother.
That was a huge hit, right?
Yeah, maybe he's got him. Some gay. It's
and
some
Doogie
gay
Howser,
somewhere.
Hello.
Totally. Fam, don't forget to join the Facebook group, True Crime Obsessed Podcast Discussion Group. Get in there, make friends, hang out with us. Join us on the Patreon. Right now we're recording our first episode of Mystery and Mrs. Murder. It is really, really, this is a well-done doc.
And very good at the cliffhangers.
Very good at the cliffhangers. Click the link in the show notes or patreon.com/truecrimeobsessed. What are we doing next, girl?
Okay, everyone get ready.
Oh, where we? This is it?
Pull over.
Oh my God, we're here?
Unknown number, the high school catfish. There's a big conversation happening around this doc. We will get into all of it, I assure you.
I don't think it's been a long time since I've seen people request a documentary this much.
And everyone's talking about it. I've been in the Discord talking about it. I'm getting DMs about what we need to include.
It's dear friend Sky, and I will not shy away. We will talk about whatever, and if we need to ask her some questions, we will.
I have a lot.
Okay, you want to ask her?
I would love to.
Okay, we'll do it then.
Yeah, I would love to, because I'm the whole thing really upset me, how it was done.
Really?
If I'm going to be totally honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll, you know, like, obviously choices...
I haven't watched it yet, so I don't know.
Sure, obviously choices were made. It upset me how certain things were handled.
The one thing I know about Sky is that she's down for the conversation.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I would love, because I really have a lot of questions.
Okay, cool.
About why she chose to do or not do certain things.
Okay, and I haven't watched it, so now I'm very excited.
Okay.
So that's coming up. It's going to be a hot
it's
one.
It's going to be big.
I'm excited.
All right. Love you guys.
We love you. Bye.
Bye.
You are the ugliest person I've ever seen.
A high school girl in Michigan was cyberbullied for more than a year.
And who turned out to be the suspect shocked everyone.
There were details in some of the texts that made it seem as though somebody was stalking them.
You had to be careful of every single word that you said, or else you could look guilty.
These texts were coming in at a clip of 40, 50 a day.
When they involve the state police and then eventually the FBI, you can just see how fast this escalates.
Have you ever sent anything to either one of them like this? This is felony stalking. I have to make sure you are safe before I leave.
The more friends you have, the easier it is to be betrayed by them.
Like, it's crazy how something like that could happen at Buell.
Things are about to get so much worse.